Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. That is www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Between the Beltways, a political podcast series from the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Each month, your hosts, Dr. Deepan Chatterjee and Dr. Shreyasi Deb, will explore the races that will shape the central Maryland counties of Howard, Montgomery, and Prince George's in the upcoming midterm elections.
Hi, welcome to the seventh episode of Between the Beltways. This is Dr. Deepan Chatterjee.
Hi, this is Dr. Shreyasi Deb.
And our guest today is Dr. Clarence Lam, who was elected to represent Maryland's 12th Legislative District in 2014. He currently serves on the House Appropriations Committee, where he's assigned to the Health and Human Services Subcommittee and Oversight Committee on Pensions. Clarence earned his medical degree from the University of Maryland and has a master's degree also in public health from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He's a graduate of Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, where he received his undergraduate degree in political science and biology. Clarence is a board-certified physician in preventive medicine at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He serves as the program director of the Preventive Medicine Residency Program, where he teaches public health physicians in training. And in addition to this, he sees patients weekly at the Occupational Health Clinic at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. So welcome, Clarence.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So my first question to you, Clarence, is what made you decide to run for the Maryland Senate this year? Can you tell us a little bit about your background in public service and why you want to be the next senator for District 12 in Maryland?
Sure. So thank you for that question. Happy to answer this. We found out that Senator Casemeyer had decided to retire earlier this year, that he, when he made his announcement back in February of 2018. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to step up to run for the Senate to continue to serve the district and help out our constituents as well as serve the residents of Maryland. I think we've done a lot over the last 4 years when it comes to improvements in the healthcare system, making sure that we also continue to make improvements in our public schools and education, making strides in the environment, continuing to protect the Chesapeake Bay, ensuring that we have access to clean air, clean water, and food. And because of all of that, we were hoping to be able to continue to serve, and I was hoping to serve in the Senate, too, to make sure that our district continues to have strong representation from individuals who have served our community and also understand it. And so I hope to be able to continue to bring that perspective to the legislature on the Senate side to work on important legislation, whether it's healthcare, the environment, both higher education and public schools, as well as providing support for local jobs, economic development, and helping facilitate job growth. And we come from a strong record of achievement for the last 4 years, and that's why I was hoping to be able to continue to serve in the Senate.
Okay.
So who are your opponents in the general election?
So we do have an opponent on the Republican side running against me for the Senate, and we also have three opponents that are Republicans running against the House members in District 12 as well.
Okay. Then what are some issues that are specifically relevant to your district?
So I think the top issue in our district is probably education. I think when you look at some of the strides that have been made, there is certainly an improvement, but I think there continue to be advances that we can make to strengthen our public schools and educational system as well. In Howard County, when you see our schools, particularly in certain high schools where there's significant overcrowding, I think there's tremendous need for us to continue to provide capital support for new schools and renovations. And we've done that over the last 4 years, but we hope to be able to continue to do that as well. It's really important when you see schools, Howard High School, that are operating at 140% capacity, and we've heard from constituents who are concerned that there needs to really be a new high school put in place to be able to serve residents in those areas. And so that's a priority for us. On the Baltimore County side, we're also concerned about schools. We've heard about some of the challenges in Southwest Baltimore County, particularly when it comes to addressing the needs of Lansdowne High School and the students who go to that area. And we're hoping to be able to continue to make sure that the students who go to Lansdowne High School have a modern facility, whether that's making sure that they have best renovation possible that virtually gives them a new school, or making sure that they get a new high school. You know, all of those options are on the table. We've been able to bring up some of the improvements and renovations from the level that they were at, but we're not satisfied yet. We're going to need to work on improvements for Lansdowne High School and all schools in Southwest Baltimore County. Fortunately, they've had some new schools being built there, but we think that there continues to be more that can be done to support the residents there, particularly at the secondary level. So I think education is probably the top issue in our district.
So what do you think of our governor, Larry Hogan's job performance so far? And he's also up for re-election this year. So as a state legislator, and you mentioned education was your top priority, what do you think overall has been his contribution as the governor of Maryland?
I think it's mixed. You know, I think there are some concerns about where his priorities lie may not always be where the district lies. And so, you know, for example, with the issue of education that I just brought up, you know, we're certainly concerned about the level of commitment from the governor to District 12 when it comes to education. When you look at what the governor's announcements are, is that he has spent record amounts of funding on education over the last 4 years. And while that may be true, you know, there may be increases in education each year, enrollment has also gone up across the state. We've seen enrollment go up here in the district as well. And so you can spend record amounts of funding and still actually spend less per student than you were before if you just spend one more dollar than you spent last year, right? So if you spent just dollars more, but enrollment goes up by hundreds, you're actually spending less per student. And that's what we're seeing. And that's why when you look at our national rankings when it comes to our public school system, you've seen that over the last 4 years, we've actually dropped.
It's dropped,
on the state level. And so we're certainly concerned about that. On the other hand, there's tolls being cut and things like that that have reduced funding to the state's budget. Is that something that could be spent on education? I mean, the residents in the district would be willing to say, well, I think this is an important commitment to make to education. We're going to make sure that funding is there, even if that means paying an extra dollar or so when you're going across the Bay Bridge. So, you know, those are conversations that I think our district needs to have. That's what's important to people here. And, you know, that's what we're going to continue to work on, particularly when it comes to education. We need to make sure that we continue to have improvements to our district, funding that's adequate, support for our teachers. There's going to be a new commission coming up later this year called the Kerwin Commission, which is issuing its recommendations, which could require a lot of support from the state to make sure that we have a world-class public school system again. That's something that we're going to be taking a close look at. We're anticipating that there will be tremendous need for our public schools to bring them up to the world-class standard. We've already made a commitment over the last few years to make sure that funding will continue to flow to schools to make sure they can implement these recommendations. And for example, just this past year, we strengthened the requirement that gaming money go to education. Mm-hmm. So we passed a constitutional amendment to the legislature that says that when it comes to gaming funding, it will be allocated as supplemental funding for education, not substitute existing funding. And we try to make this airtight as possible. And that's why it's going to be a constitutional amendment that voters will see on their ballots in November when they go to the polls. So there's a lot that we've done when it comes to education. We'll continue to make strides in that area.
Okay, great. So who are your heroes in life?
My heroes in life. That's an interesting question. You know, I think there are heroes that come to mind. You know, I think one is Abraham Lincoln. You know, and I think it's not only because of what he has done for, you know, slavery and ending that for the country, but also because he was one who has shown that he's been willing to listen to others and to, you know, bring together people that may not have the same perspectives, but able to weigh those differences and come up with sound policy, because that's what we in the legislature need to do. Many folks might have heard that, you know, he brought onto his cabinet members that were opposed to him or folks that had run against him in the past, mm-hmm. but felt like it was important to hear all those viewpoints. And so That's what we do in the legislature. The decisions we make are not easy. We're weighing different perspectives and views and then trying to make the best decision moving forward. I think the other person that really comes to mind is Nelson Mandela. He's somebody who really stuck to his principles despite some really strong challenges and adversity through his years. And it was really through that tenacity and commitment to his principles that he was able to, you know, overcome all those challenges and bring South Africa up with him and really be a phenomenal leader for that area. That takes vision, that takes, you know, determination. And I think that is also what makes a good leader.
That's great.
All right.
So what steps did the Maryland General Assembly take this year to shore up the Affordable Care Act, given the huge increases in the insurance costs in both the employer-based health insurance as well as in the individual markets across the country?
So there's been a lot going on with the health insurance system here in Maryland. We continue to try to improve it to bring down healthcare costs. That means reducing premiums. That also means trying to cut down on copays. You know, I remember the days when copays used to be $5. Mm-hmm. Now it's not uncommon for copays to be $50. That's a tenfold increase, and that means people are being squeezed, patients are being squeezed, and they're having to make some hard decisions. They may be having to make some hard decisions, like trying to decide whether to put food on their table versus being able to pay for some life-saving drugs that they really need. Mm-hmm. That's really an unfair decision. It's not a spot that anybody wants to be in. So we've actually taken steps a few years ago to empower the state attorney general, Brian Frosch, to be able to sue pharmaceutical companies. We're engaging in price gouging. We've heard so many cases where pharmaceutical companies were behaving badly, like the manufacturer of the EpiPen, who was able to jack up the price of their drug by, you know, hundreds of percent and really priced out so many people on a life-saving and necessary drug. So we've taken steps to be able to ensure that we bring prescription drug costs down. Just this past year, for example, we also passed a new program in the state with the support of folks across the aisle to create a new system to help reduce health insurance premiums. It's a system called reinsurance. Reinsurance is insurance for the insurance companies. And what that means is that when somebody goes into the ICU and has maybe $5 million bill, they're not paying for most of that, fortunately, if they have insurance companies paying for that. But what that also means is that insurance companies are spreading that cost amongst all the people that are in its plans. So we're all subsidizing that person, especially for those catastrophic costs, that can be very high. So reinsurance is insurance for the insurance companies, meaning if they have a catastrophic cost like that, let's say it's a $5 million bill and they're picking up, you know, most of it, instead of passing it along to all the other patients that are in that program, they're actually turning to the reinsurance program that's been set up by the state to compensate for that cost, so they're not passing it along to others. And that means a reinsurance program will help compensate the insurance company so they're not having that loss passed on to others. So that's a way that we've been able to set up a program in just the last year to help reduce insurance premiums. I think we're going to have to continue to do more because we're seeing insurance premiums continue to rise. Mm-hmm. But we're making strides in that area. We'll continue to do so.
Okay.
So just to follow up on that topic, given your background in public health as a physician and a public health expert, what do you think are the major public health challenges in your district and in Maryland?
So I think in my district, two of the ones that I just touched on were really big challenges. One, rising health insurance costs, meaning people you know, have a difficult time paying their premiums or have very high deductible plans that don't cover very much or have very high prescription drug costs. I think that's really, those are two areas where there are real concerns for members of our district, for people in our district. I think the other concern when it comes to healthcare is the opioid crisis.
Right.
Where people in Maryland die each day of opioid overdoses and are dying on our streets and highways. Mm-hmm. And that's really a travesty, and that's something that I think should hit home for a lot of folks, that the people that are dying of opioid overdoses are not really necessarily the people that are out on the streets that are homeless. Some of them are, but they're also our neighbors, they're our relatives, they're our family members, they're folks that you know that have been affected by the opioid epidemic. And so the state must continue to do more. That's a real public health challenge when you're looking at the number of people that are addicted, the inadequate resources that are available for people to be treated, and you know, the people that are dying every day from opioid addiction. So that's probably the one of the largest public health challenges we're facing.
Yeah, I work as a psychologist in nursing home facilities, and I'm noticing a huge increase in in addicts that are being sent to these skilled nursing facilities because there's no other place to put them, and it is a real crisis.
Even among the elderly,
even among the elderly, yes, and also younger folks. But definitely, it's a major crisis of treatment, of affordable places where treatment is possible. So yeah, it's something to think about. All right, so we're just going to quickly end on a quick fire round. So we just have a few, you know, questions. You can choose to answer them in as little or as much as you would like. So my first question is, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food. My favorite food is probably chicken soup.
Okay.
For the soul?
yes, chicken soup for the soul, definitely.
And what is your favorite restaurant in Howard County?
My favorite restaurant in Howard County? You know, we actually really enjoy going to, well, that one's not in Howard County. I was going to say the Kingsville Gourmet, but...
Oh, it doesn't have to be Howard. It could be any restaurant that is your favorite anywhere.
In the district, the Kingsville Gourmet is wonderful.
Okay.
They're on Frederick Road in Cadenceville. Would highly recommend it to folks.
Okay. And then finally, to end, something about you that you want our listeners to know that we have not discussed here.
So I think one thing that I think would be valuable for them to know is that Joy played many different instruments. It's a nice opportunity to relax. So I actually play the piano, play the cello, and used to do some choir work and also sing in an a cappella group. So.
Wow.
Interesting information, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Clarence.
And thank you for your public service.
Sure, of course. Yes, happy to do it. And I hope to be able to continue to do that as well.
Yes, and good luck on the general election.
All right. Thank you, Bo. Thanks for putting this together. And appreciate everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello and welcome back to the seventh episode of Between the Beltways. We're going to talk a little bit about the local races. There was a month-long survey that was conducted for an independent expenditure group set up to support Democrat Calvin Ball and his bid for Howard County Executive. And that poll showed a close race shaping up between Ball and the man that he's trying to replace, which is Alan Kittleman, who's Republican. So the robo-poll of 452 likely voters taken July 31st and August 1st by a Mississippi-based Democratic firm, Chisholm Strategies, showed Kittleman with 38% and Ball with 35.2% of the votes, and 26% voters were undecided. And this gap was within the poll's 4.6-point margin of error. So it's going to be a close race, it looks like.
Going more national, it is increasingly looking like Democrats may have a legitimate path to win back the Senate. If toss-up races in Nevada, Arizona, Texas, and Tennessee all go for the Dems, this will be a real possibility. Of note, Arizona and Tennessee have open seats where sitting senators Jeff Flake and Bob Corker are retiring. On the current Dem-held seats, that we are watching are Claire McCaskill of Missouri and Joe Donnelly of Indiana. Recent polls have been quite favorable to Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Although we must note here that political experts, commentators, as well as poll readers have been noting that the Democrats have a straightforward and much easier path to gain control of the House than the Senate.
But it's interesting that for the first time ever, the pollsters are giving Democrats a fair shot to win the Senate, which they were not giving at all, which there was no light or hope for them before, but now there seems to be a light at the end of the tunnel.
So That's right.
We'll see what happens. So going to the House and the Senate in terms of appropriations for fiscal 2019, what is going on is that both the House and the Senate have been doing separate pieces of legislation for the appropriations because, mind you, if an appropriations bill is not passed by both the houses and signed into law by the president, then the government shuts down at the end of the fiscal year this year, which is the 30th of September, at the end of this month. So time is running out. And since this is an election year, Congress is likely to be out for the major part of October, so they have to quickly wrap up things in D.C. And the other issue is that the Senate is trying to get through at a very, very fast and unprecedented rate their nominee for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. They're trying to rush the hearings. The vote is slated to be on the 20th of September in the House Judiciary Committee. Mm-hmm. But they're doing that, so they're not going to have any time to do the appropriations. So what has happened is that there is an omnibus bill that the Senate passed this past Thursday, the 13th of September, by a 92.5 vote. And the House is expected to pass that as well. The House voted it out of the conference committee, and it's going to go to the full floor probably next week. And it's expected to pass, and Donald Trump is expected to sign this package into law. The appropriations package funds military construction and veterans affairs, energy and water development, and the legislative branch in a big step forward as congressional leaders maneuver to avoid a government shutdown at the month's end, like I said. The Washington Post's Erica Warner notes that it would mark the first batch of spending bills for 2019 to be signed into law and comes with time running out for Congress to finalize all the must-pass bills before government funding expires at the end of this month. The three appropriations bills that are contained in this omnibus are among the easiest to pass, and the lawmakers will have a heavier lift on other appropriations measures, including the Homeland Security Funding Bill, which contains money for the president's much-doubted border wall, and that they are most likely going to push back until after the midterms. But they are planning to pass another spending package funding the Pentagon and the Health and Human Services Department before the end of the fiscal year. And if they succeed in sending those bills to Trump, they'll have provided for most of the government's budget for next year. The rest of the government would be put on autopilot with a short-term spending bill that extends 2018 spending levels.
That's right. This is something that we got to watch, what the president does in response to the quick work that Congress has done. Talking of the U.S. Senate, we bade a long and thoughtful farewell to Senator John McCain of Arizona, befitting a war hero and a bigger-than-life statesman figure that is increasingly getting lost at the Senate. People often remembered his longtime colleague and friend, Senator Ted Kennedy, who passed away of the same disease, the glioblastoma, almost 9 years to the day. Of note, his eulogies, and he planned this meticulously himself in the last year of his life, were given by his one-time opponents, past presidents Barack Obama and George W. Bush, as well as by another longtime friend across the aisle, past Senator and Vice President Joe Biden. He left a message for the American people as a goodbye, and I think it's only befitting that we should read it, a section of it now. It's a great reminder for all of us. He says, "We weaken our greatness when we confuse our patriotism with tribal rivalries that have sown resentment and hatred and violence in all the corners of the globe. We weaken it when we hide behind walls rather than tear them down, when we doubt the power of our ideals rather than trust them to be the great force for change they always have been." So long, Senator McCain.
So it's quite interesting that we lost such a bipartisan leader who was respected across the aisle. And well, he clearly talks about Trump's wall here, which, according to the appropriations bill, might be funded depending on what happens in the midterms. So we will see whether we really build walls to keep people out or not. So on that note, we are bidding you goodbye, Senator McCain, like you said, and then bidding the listeners goodbye as well.
This has been Between the Beltways, a production of the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Find it each month on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.aois21.com. Keep up with the news between episodes on our Facebook at facebook.com/BTBeltways, on Twitter at BTBeltways, and on our WordPress blog, betweenthebeltways.wordpress.com.
Copyright 2018, AS21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved. AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?